Let us talk together now. Very simply, as men.
My lovely listeners, my team and I spend a lot of time crafting this show, and the truth is, we need you. Yes, you. Do me the biggest favor, go to donate.themenwholovegod.com and donate whatever you feel good about. May I suggest a $5 a month donation? It would mean the world to me, and it ensures that this podcast keeps going, and together we will magnify God's light and love for more and more of our brothers and sisters. Thank you. I love you. That's donate.themenwholovegod.com. Brian, I'm so excited to have you here. You're a man of mystery. I met you at the Men Who Love God event a couple months ago.
And, great event, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, Cody Bobe.
Yeah, Bobe.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Dude, right here.
Love him. Yeah.
I'm holding up the book, Rock Kazak, his latest book. This is what I listen to in the gym a lot.
I listen to
a lot of books, but this one just gets me so pumped up. I'm so grateful to know him and that he lives fairly close.
Yeah. Well, he's moving to Texas now.
We need to stop that.
I know
now.
We do.
Yeah. Cody, we got to talk about that. I just love the guy. I'm glad that's a good connector. But yeah. Thanks for coming to that event. You are a dancer and you shoot a lot of guns.
I do.
And you have a lot more to the story than that. I do. But that's what you led with when you came in today. Mm-hmm. What's more fun to talk about, dancing or guns, when people bring it up?
Honestly, both, because my dance career was my life since I started dancing when I was 3. And traveled the world over 45 countries with my wife, was on national television, So You Think You Could Dance, been on Dance with the Stars, Broadway, all kinds of journeys that dance took me on and continue to take me on. I still do it. But guns is like my current passion.
I get it.
And I'm competing now and all of that. So I don't know where you want to start.
You quickly said, So You Think You Can Dance and dancing. Yeah. Was it Dancing with the Stars too? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did you get into those things? That's a huge deal. These are people's dreams and you did it all.
So I actually come from a long line of dancers. My Italian grandparents were professional ballroom dancers. They danced all over the country. They had dance studios up and down Utah and just this amazing Hollywood-esque, I should send you a picture of them, just like striking couple, old Hollywood feel. Then my grandparents on my maternal side, they love ballroom dancing as well. And they went around teaching locally around Idaho and Utah. And then my mom was a dancer and she owns a studio today. So I pretty much was raised in a dance studio.
Yeah, this is your life. Uh-huh. This is so rare to have grandparents both into ballroom dancing and to be good at it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Okay, so were you in high school?
So high school, I was on the BYU youth ballroom dance team. I got a scholarship to BYU, was on their tour team. And while there, I started dating my wife and we were competing against each other in the competitive circuit, right? Which was interesting.
Did you like her at this point?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I liked her right away when I met her. And I actually wanted to dance with her because she was the best girl. Like she was awesome. Her and her partner were winning. And I was like, me and my partner were like right there, second, third place, right behind her.
Yeah.
And so we're dating during this time, which was good. We actually kept dance out of it. Just focused on the relationship because a lot of couples who spend a lot of time dancing together will get married and it may work out, but it might not. And we didn't want it to be the dancing, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. Cool.
So we did get married. And as soon as we got married, we started dancing together. And out of college, we were like at the top of the competitive ballroom dance circuit.
And what is the circuit? Is that like the Western United States? Is it regional?
Nationwide.
Oh, nationwide.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. So we're top 12 in the country, top in the state, top one or two in the state. So from there, when we graduated college, we had a friend of ours who had been on Dancing with the Stars. Well, actually, Dancing with Stars didn't even exist yet. But at that time, he's, hey, I've choreographed this show. I need a professional couple. Will you guys come do this? You're going to be traveling all over the world. We're like, heck yeah.
No kids, fresh out of college.
No kids.
Yeah, this sounds awesome. Okay.
And my wife studied political science and history. I studied public relations and PR. So we didn't necessarily plan on doing dance as a profession. Mm-hmm. But we're like, heck yeah, paid better than anything else, any entry-level job, get paid to travel the world. So we did that for 2 years. We traveled around the world. And then we came back and I had a contact in financial services And I was like, I guess I should just get a regular job and we should just stop dancing. So I worked doing financial services for about 9 months and just hated my life. Mm-hmm. When you're in that place where you just know you're not supposed to be where you are.
That was me for a lot of years.
Yeah. So I was there and I would just be miserable. Like every morning I'd walk out to my truck and I just like my shoulders were like hanging down, my arms in front of me. And my wife saw that and she's like, you're not happy. She's like, and I feel like we're still supposed to dance. So literally we're having this conversation and then on Fox News pops up, auditions for So You Think You Can Dance are coming to Salt Lake City this Saturday. And we looked at each other. We're like, yeah, let's audition. So we threw a routine together and we went and auditioned. We both made the show. We're the only married couple in the history of the show to both make it on individually. We auditioned initially together, mm-hmm. but then they had to pick us separately. So she made top 10 girls. I made top 10 guys. Wow. And then we ended up competing against each other on the show.
What season is this?
Season 6.
Okay, cool.
It's back in the glory days of So You Think You Can Dance.
Stuck. I'm gonna check this out. Okay.
Yeah, I used to find us on YouTube and my partner most of the time was Eleanor and hers was Jacob up until the top 10. And then we switched partners and we actually drew each other's name once or twice and they're like, no, you can't dance with each other. It's an unfair advantage. And they're like, if you both make it to the finale, you can dance with each other.
Okay.
And we both made it to the finale.
Wait, so you two were the last contestants?
There were three boys and three girls.
Okay.
So there were six of us in the finale.
Okay.
And we all had to dance with each other in the finale, so we got to dance with each other. So it was this really cool crowning event where we did this. It wasn't even a ballroom dance number. It was a romantic contemporary number.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a contemporary dancer. I'd only done ballroom, but on that show, you have to do every style, which mm-hmm. is why it's really unique, different from Dancing with the Stars. And we did do a jive. They actually asked us to do something in our style. So we choreographed a jive literally the night before.
I have no idea what a jive is.
You'll look it up. You'll see what it's.
Okay.
She's wearing a pink fringe dress.
Okay.
If you put in Ryan and Ashley jive, So You Think You Can Dance. And Ashley is Ashleigh, like Slay.
Oh, Ashley. Okay. Yeah.
So it was an incredible experience. From there, we got invited to be on Dancing with the Stars as guest performers.
Who did you dance with there? Any famous
people? So I danced with Ashley. Uh-huh. So we came on, they asked us to come perform with Jennifer Hudson, the singer. And so we choreographed and performed with her. And then I later did, Dancing with the Stars had a show in Las Vegas called Dancing with the Stars Live in Las Vegas with Joey Fatone from NSYNC, who I became really close with, and a bunch of other celebrities. And we were there for a while. And then we came back and performed on Dance with Stars. So when I say I've been on Dance with Stars, it's in those capacities. Mm-hmm. As well as I'm fluent in Spanish, so I did 3 seasons of the Spanish Dancing with the Stars.
Oh my gosh.
So I had Spanish celebrities, and I got to use my Spanish.
Okay, how many years did that take? When did all the shows
start? All of that was almost 10 years. So I think about 2005 is when we stopped competing until we moved back here to Utah, like in 2013, 2014 is when we moved into our house. But we kept dancing from Utah. We kept traveling, but we wanted to settle down.
Yeah.
And we kept doing that until my wife's hips went out and we went through one of the craziest battles I think anyone could face. And we could talk about that.
Well, but dude, let's just dive in. Go for it.
Okay. And my wife's going to be like, no, you didn't get the dates right. So I don't remember the years.
That's a heck of a statement to say my wife's hips went out.
Yeah.
That sounds
When you're awful. A dancer and you're an athlete, and she was so into fitness. I built her a fitness app. We're diving into that on the side. Mm-hmm. She lost not only her ability to work out and dance, but to just function like normal life, like chronic pain all over her body. So essentially she had one hip go out. We got a surgery. It did the job, right? We were dancing 9 months later. About a year after that, her left hip started going out. Mm. And when I say that, there's like a genetic disposition with some people where the femoral head is more oval, it's not round, and they have a little deeper hip. So like A-Rod was walking right past us when we went for our consultation because he had the same surgery. Like athletes who do a lot of rotation, baseball players, hockey players, dancers, gymnasts who have this kind of genetic disposition, the labrums will tear in the hips. So the right labrum was fixed. That was good. We had to go to a different surgeon for the left one. And because the other guy wasn't in our network anymore. 30 days later, she's 10 times worse, right? She thought by 30 days, she should actually be on the upside. And the pain just kept spreading through her back, through her spine, up through her neck, her shoulder. It's like her body flipped the switch into pain, right? And we're doing everything. By the end of it, we were hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt because mm-hmm. we tried everything you could think of, everything that wasn't, most of it wasn't covered by insurance, because the surgeon we were going back to, we kept going back to the same surgeon. He's, oh, you're fine. Look, here's an MRI and everything is fine. A little sketchy situation there, because about a year and a half into it, we sent the same MRI to her first surgeon. And he's, we got to operate right away. There's scar tissue everywhere. There's scar tissue everywhere. And you probably have a hole that the surgeon left in your hip. And so at this point, we've put our house up for sale. We're just like, what do we do? Like, how do we get out of this financial hole that we've created? Meanwhile, my wife dives into neuroscience and starts studying the brain and pain science.
Like through school or on her own?
From her own. Okay. So she was a straight A student at BYU. And she's like, my body flipped a switch into pain. I'm going to figure out how to flip it back. So before
she
we
sounds even, awesome, by the
she's
way.
She's incredible.
Okay.
Like my wife, like we would not, like she could have become addicted to painkillers mm-hmm. and suicidal.
Yeah.
Instead, she's screw that. I'm going to figure it out. And it's not that it wasn't hard on us. It was extremely hard on us. Like,
dude, when there's medical, my wife went through some severe medical yeah. things during COVID. The thing that goes for us was like the hope when there's yeah. no answers, like just hope goes and it's so dark.
Dude. Yeah.
I imagine it was really dark.
It was very dark. Like, yeah. what do we do next? This failed. Mm-hmm. This failed. What do we do next?
That,
like,
drive, this failed. That drive home from the doctor. I've done it many times and it's, you go home to the house and you're.
And there's something about chronic pain. It drives you crazy, right? There is, it doesn't go away, right? And so she was literally just trying to keep from going crazy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is a whole other story. She was on her deathbed for 4 years as a teenager.
Oh, good.
And yeah, I was just told she would never live, never have children. Anyway, she overcame all of that. And when we met, it was on the tail end of that. So she realized she had PTSD because when all of this happened with her hip, all of that trauma came back.
For sure.
I'm trying to talk to her because I could see this and that just caused problems, right? That caused it just,
wait. Are you telling me that when a husband starts telling their wife how to feel or what's wrong, it doesn't go over well?
Doesn't always work. Unfortunately, especially because she actually coaches people all over the world now. So she dove into neuroscience, created this process that helped take her pain down to 2, right? And the same process works with PTSD, anxiety. It's called bioemotional healing. So I do all of the tech side of it. So I build all the web pages, manage all of the emailing, produce her podcast and all that stuff. So long story short, that's where we are now. Mm-hmm. She did have the surgery, which helped a ton. She had to do a reconstructive surgery. So we ended up going back to the original doctor, even though he wasn't under our insurance. We had to do a GoFundMe and everything because it was like $80,000 out of pocket, like day one, like. You can't get a surgery unless you give us $80,000. So that helped, but the pain and the trauma was still wired in her nervous system. So mm-hmm. she had to figure out how to rewire it. So she is absolutely incredible. She is my hero. But what most people don't know is how all of that almost broke us.
Yeah.
Like literally, we didn't have intimacy for 4.5 years.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
4.5 years.
And not only that, but you're financially strapped, you're stressed out.
And as a man, you're like,
dude,
your identity is, I need to protect her. I need to provide. Yeah. And I'm doing everything I can, but you can't keep up with the bills. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Dude, describe how you feel during this time.
Dude, I felt, hopeless, like mm-hmm. helpless would probably helpless, be a better word, which tore me apart as a man who's supposed to protect my wife and make sure she's safe. I felt helpless. But at the same time, I was like, okay, what do we need to do? Let's do it. What do we need to do? We need to sell our house. Let's sell our house. Let's do whatever we need to do to get you out of pain. One thing that did for both of us allow us to pull through in a way that if you're going through a trial right now, if you're listening to this, you need to find what God is trying to do with this trial. What is the goal of this trial that he's given you, that he's put in your lap and in your life? How is he trying to sharpen you? And because we luckily, thank God, we're on the same page with that, we were able to continue to push through. And it has. Like I said, today, she's literally changing the world. She speaks on stages and coaches people all over the world with bioemotional healing. And it just, I'm in awe of what God has done and that she has allowed God to do to her, right? Because it was a choice. She had to make that choice. Said, okay, God, make me into what you want to make me. Mold me into what you want me to become.
Okay, that's the ideal, and that's freaking amazing, and I really respect that. Those are my heroes. Those are the people who can see the bigger picture and accept the pain, accept the hopelessness, accept all the hurt, all the ego stripping, like being torn down to nothing. And then Job just like saying, yeah, you're great, God. Like,
yeah.
What did you both do in your life and in your marriage to be able to approach it that way?
We were like the odd couple in Hollywood.
Yeah. Like,
all of our friends were like, it was Hollywood, right? Yeah. There was like, just imagine like those parties and those things. Mm-hmm. Like it is 10 times worse than what you can imagine. Yeah. And we do. People ask us all the time, like, how did you survive that? Our own refining journeys before that. So I told you about my wife's, that she really turned to God during her childhood when she was forced to during her teenage years, her formative years. She was on her deathbed, right? Mm-hmm. She turned to God. And for me, so my mom, I guess we'll unpack me a little bit more. My mom's been married 4 times.
That's a lot of times.
That's a lot of times. And it was a lot of...
How many times was that during your 0 to 18 years?
So she married my current stepfather when I was like 13 or 14.
Okay.
So it was all during the years where you need to be protected and loved and like formative. Like those years before that age are really the most important. So my parents divorced when I was just a baby. I hardly knew my dad. He would come and visit every once in a while till I was about 5. And then after that, it was like a letter here and there. And then when I was 16, he took his life.
Sorry, man.
Sorry. He had his own challenges. There was a lot of abuse in his own home. My mom got remarried and this guy didn't want to have anything to do with me and my brother, my older brother.
Did he have kids of his own?
So they ended up having 2 kids. So I have 2 half-brother and half-sister. He loved his kids. He hated us. Like, he would make fun of us. He would, like, bully us.
Yeah.
If he wanted to go on a family trip,
he would leave you.
He would leave me and my brother.
Oh, my gosh. Like, and how old were you at this time?
Dude, I was, like, between 5 and 10 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house.
Dude, that sounds so awful.
Yeah. Wouldn't let us call him dad. We even wanted to call him dad. Wouldn't let us call him dad. Lot of bullying. At the same time, I'm being bullied at school. So I remember this, how old was I? I think I was like 10. Severely bullied at school, go home, bullied by my stepdad. And I remember this day at school, the bully was like trying to pick a fight with me and full on like started throwing punches at me. And him and his friends had bullied me all year long. Something snapped in me. I tell my students, because I've coached a lot of competitive ballroom dance students, that I was the shyest kid in school. They can't believe me.
Yeah.
Like they see you've been on stages all over the world. Like you're so well-spoken. You're so like, when you teach us, you're just so like motivating. I was so shy. I was so bullied. Something snapped inside of me. And I uppercutted this kid in the stomach so hard. He dropped like a rock and knocked the wind out of him. He's sitting there on the ground crying. But something happened inside of me where what it was is it was God saying, you are divine. And what is happening to you at school and at home is not okay. You are a son of God. You are my son. And this is, you're being spit on, right? And you're not supposed to allow this to happen. You're supposed to stand up for yourself. So I look back at that, and this experience is when something is like vividly clear in your mind. Like this experience, I can, all of the emotions, everything around it, everything that happened, I can remember every detail, because I think it was a pivot point in my life where I decided to stand up and to fight for myself. I didn't have a father figure. Have you read Fathered by God?
I haven't.
Incredible book.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. Read that book. And so I decided at that point that that God was there for me. He was my father. And it's not like I was perfect. I was a troubled teen. My mom got remarried again. That only lasted a year before he threw my mom down the stairs.
Oh my gosh, dude.
And my stepdad came into the picture. At this point, this poor guy, I'm like, you're not my dad.
He has no chance with you.
He has no chance. I freaking swung a golf club at this. He was amazing. And I was just like, you're not my dad. I'm this 13, 14 year old kid. Mm-hmm. And he was pivotal for me. He did not give up on me. And to this day, I call him dad.
He's dad.
He's dad. I love him so much. His name's Wiley. Shout out Wiley.
Wiley?
That's Wiley. His
name?
Yeah.
It's a great name.
It's a great name.
Have you seen the old Disney cartoon, Lambert the Sheepish Lion?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was you. Right?
That's so funny because I actually wanted to talk about lions.
I love that story. Like, he gets cornered. He acts like a sheep, and then the wolves are about to kill his mom and family.
Yes.
And then the lightning strikes, and he just realizes that he's a freaking lion.
Yeah.
And he roars, and then he becomes the lion.
Yes.
And yeah, dude. That's what
I have to show you this.
Yeah, show me.
This is my screensaver.
Okay, so he's showing us a lion. Black and white, King of the Jungle. I've had those moments where your divine identity is revealed, sometimes small, sometimes large. And I don't know if there's a better gift to have your identity, your true identity, like imprinted in your soul. I felt it while you were saying it. Like that moment, it's raw and everything else falls away. And fear is gone. It'll come back. I love those imprints, those spiritual imprints that stay with you. I call them anchor points in my life, the things I can never deny. Like that was a real experience that I experienced with a spiritual sense. And, okay, keep going. So you have the lion on your phone.
So I have the lion on my phone. Let's talk about a lion.
Yeah.
Why do I like lions? I love the cartoon. That was a great segue into this. What's the difference between a lion and an elephant?
Aside from their diet, a lion...
Personality.
Okay, yeah.
Think about it. The elephant is the largest animal. It could crush pound for pound. It's the largest animal in the jungle. It could crush a lion, but it's scared of a mouse.
Okay.
Right? So why is the lion the king of the jungle, right? Why is he king? It's because fear. He's not afraid. Mm-hmm. The elephant is afraid. Mm. So the key here is fear, right? The elephant is controlled by fear, where the lion isn't. He has no fear. And to me, that is the single greatest challenge we as men face today is fear, right? So Luke 21:26 is talking during that chapter, is talking about what's going to happen before Christ comes back. And in 26, it says, and men's hearts failing them for fear. Why? Why are we being held back by fear? And when I say that, I'll give you an example for me.
Yeah.
4.5 years, and I'm going to be really open and raw here.
Dude, you didn't have sex for 4.5 years.
Yeah, I didn't have sex for 4.5 years. Okay. I was afraid to tell my wife that I was struggling with pornography, right? Mm. I was afraid of what she would say.
Yeah.
I was afraid of what she'd think, how she'd respond. But Satan had put a counterfeit in my way to lull me to sleep. Okay. So the adversary uses counterfeits to keep us stuck from actually being the men we're meant to be. And usually it's fear, right? And in that case, that fear was keeping me in the dark till I finally faced that fear. And I went to her and I say, this really sucks. Mm-hmm. Video games, right? I played Call of Duty and occasional pornography to try to numb the pain.
You were living through hell. You want an escape from the pain.
Yeah.
This is very understandable.
Yeah. But they were counterfeits.
Yeah.
And they were counterfeits to allowing me to feel like a man, right? So what did I mean by
that?
So when you play Call of Duty and you're like shooting guys and you're winning, you're feeling like a man, but you're not being a man.
You're feeling like it. You're not being it.
You're not being it. So I see.
Yeah.
That's why I shoot now. Like I go and I shoot and I'm a competitive shooter.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, screw the video games. I actually want to be a man and learn how to defend my family, friends, neighbors, and innocent life and be a gunslinger, be deadly, a deadly weapon to protect innocent life, right? Instead of just doing the counterfeit. This is the counterfeit. Pornography is just the counterfeit of you actually fulfilling the act of being a real man with your wife and having real connection and intimacy. And fear was keeping me back. A lot of guys, they'll reach out to me like, oh, I need to go shoot, man. What, you post your stuff and I need to go do that. And I'm like, anytime. You literally name the day and they don't call me. They don't text me. Mm-hmm.
Dude, you got real with them. You gave them an opening to take a foot forward in the dark, and they're scared.
And I think they're a little afraid. And so anyway, facing that fear led to the fullness of light, where I have incredible connection and intimacy with my wife now, right? By facing that fear. If I was in a situation where I had to use a gun to defend myself, do I have fear? I have no fear at this point. I hope I never, ever have to be in that situation. I pray every day I never do. I hope that day never comes, but I'm not afraid. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, fear.
I love the Jordan Peterson quote that I'll botch. He says, timid men are not the way to go. You should be a monster and be able to control that.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like our inherent manhood is we want to be a protector. We will fight for what we believe in. We will stand up. We will use our physical bodies in the causes that we believe in. If you're timid and fearful, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. John Lovell, The Warrior Poet Way. That's another good book.
Okay.
So he talks about the same thing. I love the Warrior Poet Society. He's got a big following on YouTube and Instagram. But dude, the world is trying to demasculate us. They're trying to make us look like if you're masculine, you're toxic. And it's completely the opposite.
It's completely the opposite. Yeah.
In fact, when men are suppressing that, they become toxic.
That's right. Because their outlets are counterfeits and you can't have good things come from a bad seed if you're holding in. And
yeah,
that totally makes sense.
Learning to really understand your identity and who you really are as a man, your true identity, which is you're a son of God and an heir to his kingdom. And then your purpose, right? To preside, provide, protect for your family. Or if you don't have a family, those around you. And then also purpose in the sense that purpose can also just be like what I'm doing with shooting guns, right? Yeah. It could be, maybe you want to build something, right? You want to, I don't know, spending time outdoors, but a purpose that's not a counterfeit, something that's actually developing a skill and not wasting time and then making you feel more empty at the end of it.
Yeah. And it's
like video games and porn.
I have hobbies. I have a lot of different hobbies, and my wife and I both put a lot of value on hobbies and creativity and having that outlet. And I have at times been into video games. Currently, I don't much anymore, and nothing against it. I do play with my kids, and that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But I remember after you play video games for a while, the feeling after, you don't feel like you're going to go for a run or eat healthy. Mm-hmm. Just that awareness of, that was not fulfilling.
Yeah.
As opposed to a hobby where you're creating or getting together with someone and being creative, the end result of that is, ooh, I want more and I feel good and I want to expand.
Absolutely.
It. Yeah.
And there's a healthy balance.
Obviously. There's a totally healthy balance.
I like getting together with my brothers and my cousins. We play some video games.
Oh, dude, there's nothing wrong with video games. They're not inherently bad. But if you're running away from facing, if fear is the one that's putting you in those putting you in that mode where you just want to go hide in that, then that.
And, or just a medicine to try to numb your pain away. That's what I was doing. I ended up doing at night, where I started spending hours and hours at night because we're going through so much trauma, but it is addictive and it does start to wear on you. And I wasn't getting good sleep and I was eating crap food.
You weren't working out like this.
I was.
Oh, you were?
But the benefits weren't as clear, right? Because you're eating crap and you're not getting good sleep, right?
Dude, what's your opinion on, I love what we're doing, but what's your opinion on the physical body, the mental, because you're in great shape.
Thank you.
How important is that for a man to be a man of God?
I think it's essential.
Tell me why.
So the mind and the body are connected. It's impossible to work on your body without improving your mental clarity and your confidence. So what is the opposite of fear? Courage. Right? Mm-hmm. And when you're in shape, when you're strong, you immediately have more courage. You do.
It's true.
You have more self-respect. Mm-hmm. So I think it's essential. And that has been something for me that has always been super, super important. And my wife, which is why when she lost it, it was very hard for her. But we're on the same page with that. If we don't have a workout, if we missed our workout, we understand. Okay, go get your workout in.
Yeah. Dude, that's a cool place to be. I actually had this thought the other day, and your story reminds me of it. It's like when someone's going through a really difficult time, all they want is the escape from pain.
Yeah.
Okay. And then like when you fast forward 5, 10 years, even 1 year, but usually down the line, and I look back in my mm-hmm. life and those times that I tried to escape and I look and see the way that God stripped something from me to yeah. give me something way better that I couldn't have done or imagined on my own.
Yeah.
It's almost like when people are going through hard times, you commiserate with them, but it's like, man, I'm excited to see what's going to happen. How do you view people going through hard times and how do you help them have faith or comfort them to, because I know you're an encourager, you're a very yeah. positive guy. How do you help them see that this isn't the end? This problem isn't their identity. Like, how would you encourage someone?
I would bear testimony through my own experience, mm-hmm. right? So if you've had something you've gone through, or even someone that has gone through something and what they've become on the other side. And so you can always try to vicariously share experiences for them.
But this is interesting. Is this in person? Like how, mm-hmm. this is the connection.
If I'm in front of you, what do I say?
Yeah. I love that you say, get in front of someone and talk to them. We are so disconnected right now.
Yeah.
It's social media messaging yeah. or staying home, being digital. So you're getting in front of people.
Yeah.
Like you came out to the event to meet with me. I thought that was awesome. Okay. So getting in front of people is important.
And look in their eyes, speak boldly. Like mm-hmm. I am Italian. So I am like, ask my wife. I'm very direct. I'm very bold, which is crazy, right? Because I was the shyest kid in school mm-hmm. at one point. But if you love someone, you will look them in the eye and you will speak boldly to them and you will speak it with love and you'll speak it with encouragement, but you will also say the things that need to be said, right? And sometimes
which takes courage, man.
It does.
It takes a lot of courage. This is hard.
It does. Yeah. And everyone's different. So it depends. Maybe that person is struggling with addiction. So that's a little harder conversation. Dude, you need to stop drinking. Mm. You're wasting your life away. But did you go to Jordan Peterson? When he was in town?
In the fall of, yeah.
No, just recently,
no,
last week.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so one of the things that he said, which I loved, was you need to look at if it's a behavior, right, that their trial, because their trial might be a behavior that they can't get out of. Maybe it is pornography, right? Yeah. And they're like, I can't get out of this. And it's destroying my life. It's destroying my marriage, mm-hmm. right? I love what Jordan Peterson said. He said, first, you need to have a clear vision of what you're sacrificing by engaging in that behavior.
Okay. So honesty is like...
Honesty.
Okay.
Honestly, okay. Because you're doing this behavior, you're sacrificing your marriage, all this other... Just feelings of peace, wholeness. So you need to have that really clear. And so then you need to understand what your life would be like after you stop that behavior. Then you need to start with something small, a simple sacrifice. All right, you look at porn 2 times a day. That's or 1 time a day, whatever it is. Okay, could you cut that down to 2 times a week mm-hmm. or 3 times a week? What can you do?
Yeah.
Can you offer a small sacrifice? Can you start somewhere, mm-hmm. right? Because God is a God who rewards sacrifice. Mm-hmm. From there, okay, once you're doing pretty good, okay, it's only 3 times a week. Can you cut that down to 2 times a week? Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you cut down to 1? Could you cut it down to every other week? So what he said, I think, was super helpful for someone who's struggling with a behavior that's keeping them in a trial. But what if you're going through something like my wife, mm-hmm. right? Where it's been kind of forced upon you, not by your decisions.
Yeah.
I would say to that person to get on their knees, man, and to ask God for the purpose in the suffering. He will tell you. Probably not right away.
Yeah.
It will probably be later down the road. It might even be well after you went through it. It might be years after and you look back and you're like, holy cow, that's why I went through that. But I would be able to look in their eyes and tell them that I know that they will find the purpose in it. My favorite quote is Abraham Lincoln, where he said, if you give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first 4 sharpening the axe.
Mm.
And that's what God does with our lives. That is literally why we are here, to be sharpened, to become who we're ultimately meant to become. But we can't without that sharpening.
A freaking man, dude. That is beautiful. Let's leave it there. Okay. I think that's awesome. You brought the spirit, man. I'm so grateful for your experience and thank you for your vulnerability. That is true strength. And you've blessed my life and I know you'll bless so many out there. So
thank you, brother. It's been an honor.
If you liked this episode, I would be so grateful to you if you wrote a review and shared this episode with someone who could benefit from the messages. This podcast doesn't exist without you. So if you are feeling generous and want to help out, visit donate.themenwholovegod.com to support us today. And if you're looking for more ways to include God throughout your day, check out some of my recent music I created in partnership with Skylight. These tracks are designed to bring peace, calm, and healing. I'm going to play one of my tracks right now, and you can also listen to more from the link in the show notes.